Patreon is back. www.patreon.com/MrChaz is where you can go to sign up for the book club that I do once a month on the first Tuesday of every month. It's where you can go to sign up for coaching. It's where you can go to just ask questions and get exclusive content and learn more on your journey of teaching or parenting. If you want to hear me talk more about the book club, listen to the last podcast episode. Now enjoy the show.
I remember the first big thing I wanted was I wanted to be adopted. I didn't want to keep going to court. We had this moment situation where my mom would get clean and she would do the work that they wanted her to do. And we might, you know, go live with her again. And part of me was like, cool, I get to live with my mom. And part of me was like, whoa, what I remember about living with my mom before does not live up to what I'm getting now. And so I didn't want that for a certain point. And so I really, my case manager asked me around seventh grade, actually, and she was like, what do you want? And I'm like, I want a mom. I want a dad. You know, I used to joke about always wanting like a family of four, because that's the type of trips that they would give away to like Disney. It'd be a mom, a dad, and two kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted a family. I wanted that. And I wanted to have my case manager check up on me at home or check up on me at school. Like, these are the things that I wanted. I wanted to be adopted. And so although my case manager heard me, the family that I ended up staying with, who actually ended up being relatives of my biological father, they didn't want to adopt me because they said I was too old. And I was only in the eighth grade. And so from that point, I was just like, I really started to create this like frustration in me of like, man, I'm a good student. I don't get in trouble that much, you know? and I just felt like nobody would listen to me.
What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
Mr. Chaz.
What's my name?
Mr. Chaz.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today I have an episode that it's honestly been a long time coming. My podcast, you may have noticed, has been more monthly episodes. I'm trying to get back to the weekly episodes. This is like one of the conversations that have been backlogged. I've really been dying to talk to this person because I went to their presentation a while ago and it was amazing. It was great. And so I want to bring the conversation here, but I will let him introduce himself first.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chaz. And you're right. Long time coming. I know after the conference we were connected and I messaged you and I was like, hey, you know, let me know you're trying to make this happen. So I'm so happy that we were able to finally make it happen. But my name is DeAntoine Johnson. I go by DJ Johnson. It's a lot easier for folks. And, you know, it's just who I am and what I'm about. And I'm a counselor. I am a husband, a father. But more than anything, I'm an advocate for youth. And I get the opportunity to, in my work, counsel high school students, and I have my DJ Inspires Parenting page, which allows me to help parents better connect with their teenagers. That's what I'm most passionate about and super excited to be on the show today.
Okay. I'm excited to have you here because like I said, I went to your presentation. It was called Surviving 10. And as we typically do on this podcast, I'm going to start with a very general question. What was that about? What was your presentation about? Surviving 10, what?
Yeah, so surviving 10, of a score of 10. So if you're familiar, the A score is the adverse childhood experience. And it was a study done by Kaiser Permanente, I believe. I don't know how long ago it was, but they surveyed like thousands of people. And they just wanted to kind of get an idea of, you know, how prevalent trauma was in people's lives. And so in this adverse childhood experience test, you can Google it, but basically it's like 10 questions and they ask you, have you experienced these things before your 18th birthday? And so it's emotional abuse, sexual abuse. You had a parent go to jail. You had a parent, you had parents divorce. So they ask you 10 different things in that you know, department, that realm. And so surviving 10, me personally, I had experienced every single thing that they ask you on this adverse childhood experience test by the time I was in high school, really. And what's so crazy about me easily expressing to everybody and doing a whole presentation on being a 10 is that it's a 10 usually doesn't experience or have the life that I currently have. In fact, some of the stats and numbers, if you have like a 3, you're subjected to, you know, smoking and drinking, you know, habits. A 6 or higher on your A score, your lifespan could potentially be shortened by 20 years. Like trauma in the realm and the way that I've experienced it when I was a kid is just, I'm not supposed to be where I am today. And so when I do have my presentation, Surviving 10, it's really about, one, helping people understand the students that they're working with and the challenges that they're dealing with, and two, helping them see the other side of that trauma and how you can kind of bounce back from it by being resilient. And there's also a resilient test that goes with it as well to kind of see like, okay, you experienced this trauma, but how are you able to work through it if you were able to get to that place of healing?
So let me ask you, how were you able to get to this place of healing, right?
Yeah, no, I went into the foster care system about 4th grade, and that's kind of really where it started. I got plucked out of the traumatic situations that I was doing, literally not even a couple of months before I went into the foster care system. We were homeless. So that summer before I went into the foster care system, we just experienced an apartment fire. And so we were homeless literally for about a month or so, living in a motel. And it was me, my 4 other siblings that I live with, and my mom and my stepdad. So 7 people in a small motel room, if you can imagine. And so we were living in that situation, and ultimately my mom was able to find a place to live, but my mom didn't graduate from high school, so she had to figure out ways to make money, and ultimately got into some activities and got into a drug habit. And so that led to us ultimately going into the system. And so when I got into foster care, it was kind of like a change of scenery. And I know some people's experiences in the foster care system is like not good. But thankfully I was in kinship throughout my time in foster care, which means I stayed with a family member. I forget the term, either close or not close, but they were family. And so I got into a situation that ended up being a healthier situation for me. And throughout my time in foster care, just kind of got connected with certain people throughout my journey. Started with my mentor, Mr. Hines, who I'm still connected with to this day. And these people just kind of saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself, and really helped me understand the reality of life not being what I grew up with, and that being my normal, the trauma, all the different things that I experienced, but really understanding like, hey, like, yes, you went through those things, but this, you know, this is the life that's possible. These are the things that are possible. And this is the healing journey that you ultimately have to go on. So for me, it was loving, caring adults. And then ultimately in my 20s, you know, therapy, and I was a poet. So I would write poems that really helped me kind of express myself in that way. So those were kind of some of the ways that I was able to heal.
That's powerful. The poetry really hits home for me, because that was one of the ways growing up that I don't know what I would do without poetry, because right. I remember feeling a lot of intense emotions and really not knowing what to do with them, and almost kind of feeling anguish, internal anguish, yeah. Right. Until I was able to put it on paper, until I was able to write it. And it was, I remember reflecting, and it's not that someone necessarily told me to do it, but it was more of just, I was into hip hop, I was into music, and which is something I was interested in. And I remember kind of just reflecting on my own, like, wow, like I feel completely different than I did 15 minutes ago before I started to write. And I just, I think writing and drawing are some things that sometimes get lost in the conversation when we talk about, know, we always talk about like breathing and, you know, and like meditation and things like that. Yeah. And not for different people, different strokes, different folks. Right. But I really felt like poetry is something that helped me growing up. You mentioned that you had like a mentor and they've shown you kind of different things in life. There's anything that you kind of remember being said to you, or you remember feeling around your mentor or certain adults that were there supporting you and like helping you? Like, is there anything that you, just from your experience, you can say like, this impacted me and I can remember this pretty vividly, that you could share?
Yeah, so when I first met my mentor, I was living with my grandmother at this time. And she told us after school, like there was a park around the corner from our house. And she was like, go to the after school program at the school. And I was like, why do I want to go to I don't want to do that. I just got a school, I've been at school all day. And so ultimately I, you know, conceded and went, and it was awesome. Like, it was at a park, so that was a plus. And then this particular community center had like a pool table and tennis, the small tennis. I can't even think of it right now.
Ping pong.
Yes. I couldn't think of it. And so all these different like activities. And so I would go there, play, you know, these different games, play with my friends. And so one day my mentor would come in and he had like books and different things. And he would encourage us, like it was a boy group. So he would come and have us come in there and have a conversation. And I remember like at first, like, no, I don't want to go in there. Like, I want to have fun. I want to play. And then one day he brought pizza and I was like, okay, I'll come. And so, yeah, no. And we would just have different conversations. We read out of this book called Talks My Father Never Had With Me. And when you got to think about this, like, you know, if you follow my page or you hearing me for the first time, like one of the things you'll know about me is like my dad wasn't in my life. And so I grew up, my mom and dad had me when they were 16. My dad kind of walked out of my life early. My mom married my stepdad, and that's kind of where the trauma and abuse happened. And so, you know, I didn't have a good example with my stepdad, because I always saw him as this angry, mean, I don't want to be around type of person. And then I didn't have this connection with my dad. And so for me as a young boy, I was yearning for that connection with a male, right? A father figure. And so going in there and just kind of having that father figure and my mentor and having these conversations that, maybe should have been having with my father, or different things that he made me think about, that it just changed my perspective on different things. And what was so dope about my mentor is that at the time that I met him, I think he was working full time. He was a city councilman. He was very involved in his church. He was doing all these different things and still found time to come into this community center and mentor young boys. And as long as I've known him, he's done that. And so now, as a person who is in a position where I'm helping students and mentoring young boys as well, it's like, he always told me, like, if you could reach one, you did your job, right? And so for him, all the different messages, all the different things. And I tell you, I can think the most important thing. I think of him. I think of Mrs. Jackson, my third grade teacher. I can pinpoint so many different people throughout my journey. But I really, the thing that each of them had in common is that none of them gave up on me. And it wasn't that my parents sort of, you know, it wasn't that they intentionally gave up on me. But as a kid, you take it as, well, you gave up on me, Dad, because you weren't in my life and you left. And for whatever reason it was, you weren't there for me when I needed you the most. And my mom, you chose drugs over me, even though that wasn't the case. But as kids, we see it that way. And so since you chose drugs over me, like, I felt like my family had given up on me. And so to have adults in my life who were like, no, I see you. Your life matters. You matter. You can make something of yourself. I see potential in you. Those were the messages that I really started to stick with. And it really helped change my life.
Mm. And now you are help changing other lives, teens and parents. And you also have a child of your own who's, am I 4 or 5?
He's 6 now, man.
6.
Growing like a weed. Yeah.
So what like advice do you, you know, what are some things that you see parents really struggle with or not really understand? And what do you think is like what's really important message that you find yourself maybe repeating over and over again because you feel like it's so important for parents of teens or maybe parents in general?
Yeah, no, I got an autonomy. And I think this was the prevalent message, literally, I can remember from middle school through high school. And as a person who's in the foster care system, I'm moving from home to home. I went to 4 different elementary schools, 3 different middle schools, 3 different high schools in my kindergarten through 12th grade career. Mm-hmm. And so the one thing that I remember about that time is like really wanting things for myself. I remember the first big thing I wanted was I wanted to be adopted. I didn't want to keep going to court. We had this moment situation where my mom would get clean and she would do the work that they wanted her to do. And we might, you know, go live with her again. And part of me was like, cool, I get to live with my mom. And part of me was like, whoa, what I remember about living with my mom before does not live up to what I'm getting now. And so I didn't want that for a certain point. And so I really, my case manager asked me around 7th grade, actually. And she was like, what do you want? And I'm like, I want a mom. I want a dad. You know, I used to joke about always wanting like a family of 4, because that's the type of trips that they would give away to like Disney. It'd be a mom, a dad, and 2 kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted a family. I wanted that, and I wanted to not have to have my case manager check up on me at home or check up on me at school. Like, these are the things that I wanted. I wanted to be adopted. And so although my case manager heard me, the family that I ended up staying with, who actually ended up being relatives of my biological father, they didn't want to adopt me because they said I was too old. And I was only in the 8th grade. And so from that point, I was just like, I really started to create this like frustration in me of like, man, I'm a good student. I don't get in trouble that much, you know? and I just felt like nobody would listen to me. Nobody would hear my concerns or the different things that I wanted for myself and for my life. And it hit a road, you know, going into my senior year and into college, where I was just really frustrated and feeling like, man, I just want control over my life. Not control where I feel like, oh, you know, I can run my life and I can pay bills and I can do all that. Like, no, like I want to be able to make meaningful decisions in my life. I want to be able to express something and my voice be heard. And I felt like I wasn't asking for anything that was too crazy or too out of this world. So for me, every time I'm talking to parents, I see the signs of them curtailing or holding back their child's autonomy in some form or fashion, because they still have this dynamic in their mind that I'm the adult, you're the child, I'm up here, you're down here. And I know some of us really try to work hard to kind of erase that dynamic for a certain extent. But as you talk about and I talk about, like for me, it's about guiding. It's about using your adult experience as a guide, not as I'm in charge or I'm flexing my years of being on this earth over you as the child. Mm-hmm. So for me, if I'm giving any advice to anybody out there, it's finding ways to cultivate that autonomy in your child's life, especially if they're teens. You can definitely start when they're younger, but as they're getting in the middle school to high school years, you really got to start having conversations around what that looks like for you and your child.
Okay. Well, how do you do that? Because,
yeah,
you know, like, I mean, and I talk about the same thing about of even for young children, about mm-hmm. starting to give them, you know, choices and where letting them know where their power is and what they can do, what is within their power and what they can do, and focusing on that. And obviously for a 3-year-old, you're there's only going to be so much autonomy that they can have because, you know, their brains are still developing. But even for a teen, their brains are still developing, and it can be really easy to make choices that aren't that your parents, that parents or adults may not approve of, right? Yeah. And that's also, I would say that's a part of being a teen, right? Like that you're not always going to necessarily meet the expectations that adults have for you. So how do you coach parents into giving that autonomy when, especially as a teen, sometimes there's a lot of at stake there, and there's a lot of maybe potential for harm, or there's a lot of concern, or at least that's what we're thinking, right? And we're really concerned about maybe their safety, or if they're going to hurt themselves or someone else. How do we do that?
I always talk about the Monopoly game, and I bring up Monopoly because, you know, it's a game I feel like we've all played. And the thing about Monopoly is that all of us adults at some form or some point in our lives have won in Monopoly in some form or fashion. And if you haven't, I feel sorry for you, but I feel like all of us have had an
opportunity. I don't think I've won Monopoly before.
But like, if you haven't won, then you play it and you understand what it takes to win. How about that?
I get it. And okay. I'm there. Right?
And so the reality is, eventually we played the game enough to figure out how to play it well or good or to the point where you might win, right? And I think the analogy that I use is like what we try to do with trying to make decisions for our child, or trying to prevent them from making certain decisions that's going to steer them certain ways. I look at it as, oh, you know how to play Monopoly, so you're trying to show them how to play Monopoly, as opposed to giving them the rules, giving them the guidelines, and letting them figure it out for themselves. I think the way that I look at it is we're trying to help them live their lives, as opposed to guiding them, giving them tools or rules or whatever it might be to say, okay, here it is, you figure it out on your own. I think what we need to talk about, Mr. Chaz, is I think a lot of people who have issue with that is that they have issue with their children failing, because they have attached their children's failure to them as parents, to them as people. And I feel like, and the thing that I always ask parents, I say, look, how many of you have failed at something? How many of you now have learned a valuable lesson from that failure? And just about every one of them raised their hand. Yeah. The most important lessons that I've learned in life came from my failures. Yeah. And so if we as parents keep operating, especially with our teenagers, like, oh, I don't want you to fail. I don't want you to get a bad grade. I don't want you to make this dire, bad decision. It's like, well, how are they ever going to figure it out? And I think what we inadvertently do is, when we're kind of timid and we're making decisions for our child all the time, they're going to become a child who is in the world and nervous to make mistakes and tiptoeing around trying to figure things out, because they weren't allowed that autonomy to make mistakes and it not be a big deal. I talk about that a lot with my parents, to say, can your child make mistakes and you not make a big deal about it? Like, for me, safety is, can I express something to you that I dislike about what you did to me? Can I express, can we have a conversation about this rule that you have in the household? Can we figure out how we can work together to make if I don't follow a rule that you have, can I have input on what the consequence is? Like, for me, we think autonomy is like, we got to let them run amok. It's like, no, let them have a voice. Let them understand that their voice matters. Let them cultivate the different things that we keep trying to force them to have when they become adults. But the reality is, they need practice. They need to be able to see it modeled to them. And I think that's really what I mean by trying to cultivate that autonomy in teens.
I love that. And you brought up grades, and I think that's a really great place to talk about failure, because that's something that stresses a lot of people out.
Oh yeah.
Especially, you know, thinking about where we get so anxious, especially as adults, thinking about like their future, and like every decision that they're making right now is going to destroy them, their future for the rest of life. Like, if they don't make an A on this test, they're going to have a bad grade, and they're not going to get into that college, and they're never going to get a job, then they're going to be homeless, and then they're going to be right. And so, like, I feel like often we can kind of go down this rabbit hole, but how do you actually suggest kind of responding? Maybe your child is not doing well in school. Maybe your child is getting D's and F's. And how do you help your child and guide your child without your anxiety take over?
Yeah, I think it's such a loaded conversation, because I think, man, because if you talk to the teens, the question that comes up a lot is, how is this education serving me? Because the way it served me 10 years ago is not how it's serving them now. Yeah. And if I go through these, you know, 4 years of high school, and then you say, oh, I got to go through 4 years of college, but I'm seeing people graduate from college and not getting the jobs that they worked for or wanted for themselves. So it's like, I'm not seeing right now how education is going to help me. And it's a valid reason. It's a valid concern by teenagers. Yeah. Like, they're looking at the world and they're like, yo, I don't know how I fit into this. Yeah. Besides, you know, going on TikTok and doing, cause I see firsthand what it looks like to be consistent with content and then, you know, blow up with that. So I think parents really got to have a conversation about what's out, like, what does education mean right now? Not what it meant for us in the past, not what it meant for me 5-10 years ago. Like, what does it mean right now? And I think once you have that conversation, then you can kind of have some leeway on, like, okay, now how can we work together to make this work for both of us? Because you could, in your home, if the foundation is, hey, you got to get your high school diploma and then we'll figure it out after that. Okay, let's have that as the goal. Let's have, but more importantly, your kids' grades can't be about you and your parenting. It has to be about them. And one thing I always tell parents is, like, we're playing tennis, and when we're focusing too much on their grades, the ball is constantly in our court, and I need y'all to put the ball right back in their court, because their failures are their failures. Their struggles and tests and different things are their struggles. As long as you were there to support them and say, I'm here for you, I'll get you whatever you need, tutor, whatever it might be, but these are your grades. This is your responsibility. I'm putting the onus back on you. Your child will either rise to the moment, or they'll go through the process that schools typically have. I know the schools out here, we have credit recovery, you have continuation schools. They won't let them fail if they are willing to put the work in and do what they need to do. And so as parents, you have to decide, okay, is this failure about me and making myself feel bad about a parent? Or is this a failure that we can utilize to help our kid learn from and help them bounce back? Oh, man, my most favorite students that I've ever worked with in all the time that I've been working with high school students are students who I've seen be down 30, 40 credits and somehow, some way found a way to end up graduating because they were able to fall, have all the things said about them. And then finally, those are the happiest kids at graduation. I'm going to tell you, the biggest smiles because they're like, yo, I didn't think I was going to make it here. And I think as parents, we don't believe that they'll make it there. But as I always remind parents, ye of little faith, right? We plant seeds and we do all these things in our parenting journey, but we don't bring our faith along with it. And I think when it comes to failure and grades and different things like that, when our kid is failing, let's try to get to the bottom of it, right? Is it, do they just don't feel like it, or do they not feel supported? A lot of our students don't even feel confident to ask their teachers for help. So it could be such small things if you just had a conversation around, hey, how can I support you, as opposed to, why are you failing? Why are you this? Why are you that?
Yeah, well, a lot of good things there. And I think allowing them with that autonomy, allowing them to make the decision, and maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe it's not a decision that you would make, but then that failure feels like they can own it more, which means they can learn from it more rather than us making the decisions for them and them still failing. And then it's like, it's easier for them to kind of blame, like, this is like your fault, right? It's exactly. easy for them not to take accountability. And to some extent they're right, because like we took full ownership over that whole decision and force them to do something, then it is more on us, as opposed to allowing them to take responsibility and accountability for their own actions, which can't happen if we're making them do the actions, if we're kind of what's a ventriloquist kind of puppeteering them, right? Another thing you said, I think, is really, honestly, I want to have more conversations about. I want to have more conversations about how education is maybe serving them differently nowadays. Yeah. And, you know, that I almost pretty much, when I said, oh, you're not going to get a job, you're going to be, you know, like, I was pretty much just really running the script that I grew up with and describing that and kind of what we were all told. And maybe to an extent, it was, I think, in different times, and it's been varying degrees of truth to that. But I think what we can see, and even what the teens are seeing right now, is that that is becoming less and less true, that you have to follow that specific path of you gotta go to college, you gotta get a job, that there are so many other choices and opportunities that are available to this next generation of children that weren't available to us. Yeah. And if we don't take time to really acknowledge that and not just run our unconscious script of this is another one of those general cycles. This is where I was raised. Yeah. So I'm just going to do it and tell you to do it the way that I was told to do, as opposed to being thoughtful and intentional and conscious of what we're doing in the current state of the world. Yeah. I think it's one of those kind of generational cycles that we don't really necessarily talk about enough. How do you be flexible with the times? Because I feel like kids are always saying, like, it's different. And even as a millennial, right? And even us millennials, it's different now than what you grew up with, right? Yeah. And I remember some frustration in seeing that and trying to explain it and trying to say and not feeling heard or understood. And I think that if, you know, the older generation, which is now me, too, with this, you know, Gen Z, I think it's on us to just to really listen to what the teens are saying and really take it into account of and really look into it. And as opposed to just being dismissive and seeing it as, like, oh, you're just trying to get out of work. You're just being lazy. You're just such and such and such and such and such and such.
That's good.
Any other thoughts on, like, because I don't know, I think it's a conversation I haven't had enough. Any other thoughts on just how, like, how do you coach? So what are some, I'm trying to get my words out, what are some ways that you can kind of, how can that conversation go? Maybe, because every kid wants to be a YouTube star, right? It's what they're seeing, it's what they're consuming, right? And so it's like, I want to be a YouTube star. Like, I can totally do it. I could do what Mr. Beast does. I could do what Pop Trick stars do, whoever.
Yeah.
How do you kind of engage in that conversation?
For me, I think we can all agree, like, even though college might not be serving us in that way, I feel like at the bare minimum, it seems to do anything in this life, a high school diploma is a good place to start.
Yeah.
And so I say, okay, we at least have that, parents, right? So we have that conversation, but also we're open
and it's free. And it's free.
And it's free. Right. and so we at least can start the conversation there. And then I have a conversation like, look, what do you like? Because I think kids see YouTube star and they see different things and they think it's something that happens instantly. And so say, okay, I think that's dope that you want to be a YouTube star, but can I share with you maybe the work that it took to get to a point where you have 1 million subscribers, you have this many subscribers, whatever it might be. I think Mr. Beast had a video, since you brought him up. I think he had a video. Oh, great. The landscapers are here. I think Mr. Beast had a video where he talked about how many videos that it took for him to get to a place where he's at. I don't remember the exact number, but it was a lot. You're talking recording anywhere from 10 to 20 videos a week and posting every day and being consistent. So, like, no matter what our kid wants to do, there has to be consistency. There has to be a willingness to work hard. It has to be things that they do that'll put them in position to be the YouTube star or be the things that they want to be in life. I think it's, you entertain the question, but you don't shoot them down. You just say, okay, did you know, like, you have to, Mr. Beast made like 20 videos a week for a year or two before he actually blew up, right? Do you know anything about what it takes to, you know, have your videos be shown in an algorithm on a consistent basis? Like, having these conversations around, and that might be like, you're right. Actually, I don't think I want to work that hard. Or he's like, oh, this is what it takes. Like, hey, if we want to really entertain this, I'm willing to help you make a video a day and put some content out there. But you got to be willing to do that work. You got to be willing to put that time in. I don't think there's anything wrong with entertaining the conversation about whatever it is that they want to do. But it's also helping them see the reality of what it will take to become those things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even just, you know, yeah, everyone wants to be a YouTube star, but like, yeah, I, as a content creator, a lot of times people don't recognize all of the work that really goes into it. And also too, how maybe a lot of things in that you're learning in middle school and high school are directly applicable to becoming a content creator, especially because you're also talking about becoming an entrepreneur. You know, like you gotta, you, there's a lot of math involved, right? There's a lot of English involved when you're doing copy and you're writing like captions and things like that, right? Yeah. There's a lot of, I think I may not be able to vouch for science, but I feel like just the, just the understanding how the world works around you and just kind of like, it can be very valuable to even continue to hold a conversation and talk about things and to make comparisons and right. And so I think I would love to see more in education. Like I think we really should have a YouTube university for high schoolers, because everyone, if they're already interested in it, if they're interested, they're going to be more likely to work hard. And then you can attach all those other things. Like, why am I learning about, you know, why am I solving for X? Like, why is that? Why do I need to know how to do that? Right.
Yeah.
It's like,
valid questions too.
Oh, well, but like, dude, if you are doing some affiliate marketing and you're getting, you know, 7% on a $48 course, how are you going to know how much money you're going to make and how much to budget for your, right? Like, so these things that I think a lot of times kids are like, I don't see how it's going to connect to what I want to do and the reality now, actually really do. I think we have a hard time sometimes maybe explaining it as adults because that's not our world. I think we have a hard time kind of connecting with teens and in their world. Is there any, you have any advice about that? Just the disconnect of the generations with teens?
For me, I always pinpoint it back to the way we were raised. I think the majority of us older generation folks were raised where we weren't allowed to have a voice. And anytime we talked about respectful or otherwise, it was still seen as disrespect to our parents. And so I think a lot of us have that still in our mind, in our mindset. And so when our kid does come to us on certain things, it's like, are we viewing it from that disrespectful lens? Or are we actually listening and hearing what they have to say? And so I always say this, and I think I've even heard you say this at one point, like anytime they come to you with anything, behavior, a conflict, a situation, curiosity, respond with curiosity, respond with, tell me more about that. Or, how can I help you or assist you in this way, right? Because we don't know. And I think the biggest mistake that parents make is that you keep pretending like you have all the answers. You keep pretending like you got to have 100%. You know, batting 100% in your parenting journey. And the reality is you're not perfect. Nobody is. And so stop pretending that way and really become the human being that your child wants you to be. They want you to be real. They want you to make mistakes and show them how to bounce back from mistakes. They want to be real and have these conversations with you. But you have this yourself on this pedestal as an adult up here and a child down here. And it's like, no, like meet them where they're at. And have those conversations with them. And you'll be surprised at the things that you learn. Like, I just was reminded of a video. They said teenagers are two ways. They're the moody, frustrating, dealing with their, you know, the parts of their brain that isn't fully developed yet. But they're also the most insightful, thought-provoking people if you allow them and hold space for them. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm constantly putting myself in a position where I can hold space for teens in that way. And they surprise me every time. Still to this day, I mean, we're talking years of working with teenagers, and I still get surprised in my work with them with things that they say, things that they do. So I just feel like we just gotta hold space for them. And I know it's hard if you haven't had space held for you, but it's something that we gotta be able to work through because we're gonna continually miss this generation, and it's gonna be a missed opportunity for us.
I want to kind of start to wrap this up, and I want to hear what your kind of, you mentioned autonomy is kind of one of the big things, and we spend most of the time talking about autonomy. And it sounds like the way that you're saying to connect with children or connect with teens is to really listen to them and hear them, right? Is there, you have any advice for parents who have teens who have kind of shut them out, who don't talk to them, who just kind of, you know, the parent is trying to make this for connection, but the teen is shutting the parent out?
Yeah, I think most times when a teenager is in that place of being shut out, one of the symptoms of low sense of control is, you know, being alone, being to themselves, shutting themselves out in the world, anxiety, self-medication, different things like that. And so that could be part of it. The other part of it is, I feel like the best relationships that you can have with teens is cultivated before they're teens. But me saying that doesn't mean that it's too late for you to do that. So I think it's taking into account all the ways that you may have missed the mark as a parent. And I'm not saying, look, I know that as a parent, you've done all that you could and all that you could, and you've been all you could be to them. But the reality is there's certain needs that they need that we weren't able to make, whether we knew that or not. And so being able to kind of give yourself grace in that space and also be willing to maybe apologize and make amends in that space as well. So I think when we have a teen that's withdrawn or going to their space or their room and not really wanting to interact, is one, being patient with that process, right? We're not rushing this just because, like, hey, I already apologized, so move on, right? Because saying no, like, let them, like, all these years of things that have been built up that have been brought us to this point, you got to take just as much time, maybe less, and be patient with that process so it can turn into something else. And I think what they need to see is change behavior, right? They need to see you, even though you're like, I made bids and they didn't adhere. And it's like, okay, like, always remind them that you're here for them when they need you, right? Even if you can't talk in that moment, you say, hey, well, I'm here for you whenever you need me. If you ever need to talk, if you ever need to anything, just let me know. I'm gonna be here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we gotta be uncomfortable. We gotta be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's just sitting in space and not saying nothing at all. Maybe your kid goes to their room to play video games all the time. What's stopping you from going in there and just watching them play and asking them questions about different things that he does in the game and why he likes playing it so much? Like, just these are small ways that we can connect. And I think as parents, we think, oh, I can't connect with them in the way that I want to connect with them. And you need to figure out how to connect with them the way they want to be connected with.
Yeah. Figure out how to connect with them the way that they want to be connected with. Yep. Powerful. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate having this conversation with you. We both had landscapers kind of make an appearance towards the end. So I hope it didn't stare anyone away, because it was a really great conversation. And I think we'll end it right there, unless there's any last things you want to say before I push in, DJ, or anything you want to, even if you want to plug something, this is your time.
I'm the worst with plugging myself, so I'll just leave it at that. But I will say I appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chaz, to be on your podcast and have this conversation with you. Like you said, it was a long time coming, and I knew it was going to be hot fire. So I'm excited to just see, you know, the responses from it. But yeah, no, if you're out there, the thing that I always encourage parents on is, like, look, you're not perfect. Stop pretending to be. You're a human being. And so if you make a mistake, apologize, make amends, move forward. But that is going to be more powerful and more impactful to your parent, to your child's journey, than pretending like you got it all together. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, first and first, as a person who helps parents and as a person who is a father myself, I'm toe up from the flow up is my term that I always use. And I'm going to make mistakes, and I make mistakes, but I make amends, and I just try to be better than I was yesterday. And I use Mr. Chaz saying all the time, be an improvementist, not a perfectionist. And I really live by that. So just wanted to leave y'all with that.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?